Hello and welcome to this AAT podcast on team working. My name is Tracy Sinclair. Introduction. If you work for any organisation, you have customers, people for whom you provide a service. Although some of those customers are external, many of them are internal, and both should be treated with the same degree of courtesy. When you talk to or meet with those internal customers, your reputation and the reputation therefore of your team and department is being exposed. These internal customers are not an interruption to your day-to-day business. Without them, you may indeed have no business, as ultimately you are all working together towards the same goals for your organisation. How well you communicate, collaborate and cooperate with each other can significantly impact how well you achieve those external and commercial goals. The moments that you pick up the telephone to accept a call, walk into a meeting room, or start to write an email, you represent yourself and your team. How you personally handle these interactions may be the only real opportunity that your colleagues have to form and reinforce their opinions of you. Therefore, the impression you give is important. If you don't handle it well, then their response to you, either now or in the future, may be less positive or productive. This podcast is designed to help you focus on the art of building good rapport and effective communication with your colleagues, with the aim of providing a professional and friendly service, thus creating an enjoyable and effective working environment, which equally supports the achievement of your targets. Communication focus. Most of us like to deal with people who are pleasant, polite, and whom we can trust. And if we communicate well with each other, we tend to experience far less stress. Queries and tasks take up less time, which means we can become even more productive. Think about the times when you interact with some of your colleagues. What are your wants, needs, and expectations of them for this interaction to be effective from your perspective? Now put yourself in the shoes of some of your colleagues. What do you perceive their wants, needs, and expectations to be when interacting with you? Sometimes, building rapport and good working relationships with each other means going that extra mile. So, what is the difference that makes the difference? When interacting with you, what could your colleagues do or say that would really make a positive difference to you? And when interacting with your colleagues, what could you do or say that would really make a positive difference to them? Let's look at building rapport. Recognising moods and feelings. A conversation is a two-way exchange of information, normally with one person speaking while the other listens, and vice versa. During an average conversation, you can expect to spend about half of your time listening. Learning to listen actively is an important skill that can really make a difference to building good working and social relations. When you fail to listen properly, you may misinterpret what is being said, lose the thread of the conversation, jump to conclusions, misunderstand the speaker's real problem or concern, make an inappropriate response, give the wrong information perhaps, or interrupt the flow of the conversation, or even make the speaker feel angry, hurt, or confused. Learn to play the detective. Although you hear with your ears, you listen with your mind. Clear your mind of distractions and make a real effort to enter into what the other person is saying. This is vital if you are to recognise and understand your colleague's moods and feelings. Active listening takes place at three levels. 1. Thinking. This means listening to the person's words, phrases, and sentences. 2. Feeling. This involves listening for the emotions behind the words, for example, the feelings that go with what is being said. As a detective, you will note voice, volume, tone, hesitation, etc. 3. Intent. This means listening for the reasons behind what is being said, even if the person does not actually state what these are. Remember to make listening noises. Ask relevant and appropriate questions. Reflect feelings. Repeat back key information and summarise what has been said. You cannot possibly begin to build rapport until you demonstrate active listening to your colleague. Using techniques to establish maximum rapport. The best rapport builders automatically alter the way they speak and move to suit the person they are talking to. When dealing with others, you can use a useful three-step neuro-linguistic programming technique to help convey understanding and establish rapport very quickly and effectively with people. Voice tone is said to be more than 5 times more influential than the words you speak. So, if you want to gain rapport, try to match the person's voice in terms of tone, speed of speech, breathing rate, volume, and pitch, for example. Studies of top telesales people confirm that they actually do this, shifting their voice automatically to suit the person that they are talking to. This step is called mirroring. If you were face to face, you would also try to align your body language in a subtle way. You may be surprised how quickly you can build rapport by mirroring alone. Pacing goes a stage further by enabling you to keep in step with the other person, altering your speed of speech, volume, and voice tone to match theirs. It is possible to do this only once rapport has been established, otherwise it can seem like mimicry. You might then want to move on to leading. This involves a gradual change in your speed of speech, voice tone, and volume in order to create a shift in the other person. For example, having gained rapport with an irritated colleague, you are likely to want to calm them down. Little by little, you would reduce the volume and speed of your voice and adopt a more relaxed tone until the other person is ready to communicate more calmly, resulting in a fruitful interaction for both parties. Similarly, if you are frustrated by the slowness of the other person, avoid showing any impatience, but instead slip into their rhythm and match or mirror it. Once you have paced this and built rapport, you can gradually increase the rate of your voice to lead them into a speedier way of communicating. Preferred communication styles. Taking this a step further, we can also match or mirror the person's preferred communication style. The three main preferred communication styles are visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. Visual. This type of person prefers a face-to-face conversation to talking over the telephone. They can feel rather uncomfortable on the telephone because their preferred method of getting information across is not possible, i.e., they like to check out body language and facial expressions. People with a visual preference tend to speak quickly in an unconscious attempt to keep pace with the pictures in their head. They will be more concerned with how something looks rather than how it feels or sounds to them. They will tend to use expressions like appears, seems, looks, aspect, perspective, sight, view, clear, fuzzy, vague, demonstrate, show, sketch, picture, dream, glimpse, scene, look at, notice, observe, see or watch. If your colleague says, "I'm pretty hazy about the benefits of this approach," you could help create rapport with a response like, "Let me give you a clear picture of the benefits for you," and then use verbal pictures to describe the detail. Auditory. Those who demonstrate this preference are often fluent and articulate. Although they may tend to speak more slowly than the visually oriented person, they like to hear themselves talk and will often do so for long periods of time. Their concern is more with how something sounds rather than how it feels or looks to them. So they will often use expressions such as announce, communicate, proclaim, articulate, expressive, loud, quiet, noisy, silent, discuss, talk, express, question, give an account of, outspoken, speechless. If your colleague says, "I've heard a bit about this and would like you to tell me more," you could help create rapport with a response like, "I'm sure you'll like the sound of it. Let me tell you about it." Kinesthetic. People who demonstrate this preference make sense of the world through their feelings. Since feelings can be hard to put into words sometimes, such people often speak more slowly. There may be pauses when they are asked a question. They base their decisions on gut feelings, and their words tend to have a physical quality to them, for example, smell, taste, touch, and feeling. They will be more concerned with how something feels rather than how it looks or sounds to them. They will tend to express themselves with words like inactive or active, bearable, warm, calm, collected, feelings, affected, emotional, unbearable, hurt, painful, stressful, tense, control, steer, push, support, solid, hunch or intuition. If your colleague says, "I'm feeling a bit uncomfortable with the changes that have been made," you could help create rapport with a response like, "Yes, I had a hunch you'd feel like that. If I walk you through the improvements, it may help you to grasp why we've made them." So, to show your colleagues that you are on the same wavelength during a conversation, listen out for the following verbal behaviour and reflect it back to them. What words and phrases are being used? What mood is the person in? Is the person talking big picture or high levels of detail? Is the person speaking fast or slowly? Loudly or quietly? Is the person oriented to logic, results, or people? Recognising and using the person's preferred means of communicating are quite advanced skills to develop and need practice. Beware of focusing so hard on the words your colleague uses that you lose contact with what they are really communicating to you. Show that you're listening verbally. Paraphrase. Use your own words to demonstrate your understanding of what has been said. This also enables any misunderstandings to be corrected. Respond. Make listening noises and refer to what the individual says. Open questions stimulate active discussion and enable you to check your understanding. Summarise regularly and especially at the end to confirm understanding and to check nothing has been omitted. Empathise by responding to feelings. That's causing you a lot of pressure and stress, or you seem pleased about that. Words, tone of voice, and body language. Organisations lose billions of pounds every year because of poor communication between and amongst customers and staff. Good communication happens when you convey what you mean politely and respectfully and are understood accurately. This process involves the use of words, voice tone, and body language. Choosing words and phrases with care. Words. People will make judgments and draw conclusions based on the words you use and how you say them. That means you need to be concerned about what you say. The person will listen if your words are chosen well, but badly chosen words will work against you. So choose your words with care to express simply yet accurately your intended meaning. Use words that are straightforward and clear and that your colleagues can easily understand. Use everyday language, avoiding jargon and technical terms wherever possible. When speaking to people, be sure to use you, your, and the person's name, as these show your concern for the other person. Positive words and statements are also important because these are the things the person wants to hear. The dictionary defines positive as expressing certainty or affirmation to emphasise what is good. Here is a list of 20 of the most persuasive and positive words in the English language. Benefits, discovery, easy, effortless, free, guarantee, health, keep, love, money, new, promise, protected, results, retain, safe, save, secure, simple, and strength. Think about how you could inject some of these words into your conversations with your colleagues and team workers. Putting energy and enthusiasm into your voice. Voice. Although words are important, so are voice tone and body language. Research has shown that the words alone make only a small contribution to the total impact of communication at approximately 7%. How you use your voice has a strong impact on how well your colleagues will perceive you. Tone portrays the emotion and warmth in the voice. It is not an accident that broadcasters have excellent vocal abilities. They know that if they speak poorly, people will not listen to them, are not as likely to believe them, and will even make negative judgments about them. Effective questioning. Effective questioning skills are central to good communication. Good questions can control the direction of the conversation and enable you to draw out the information you need. There are two main types of question, open and closed. A closed question will get you a single fact or a yes-no response, whereas an open question will encourage a fuller answer. Even though most of us know this, we often find it hard to use questions effectively in practice. Open questions will give you the fullest response. They typically start with words like who, what, why, when, where, and how. For example, what are your ideas regarding? Don't be afraid to encourage the speaker to keep going and explore issues with further questions if you don't get a full reply first time round. Probing questions concentrate the conversation on areas of special interest. Closed questions. These are often useful for checking precise details. But if you use too many of them, it can feel a little like a Gestapo interrogation. For example, is this to be, did you, have you, is there, at what time did, and were you? If the answers you are getting are too short, or if you feel stuck, use an open question again to get things going. Remember to keep your body language open and friendly. Questions to avoid. Leading questions give an indication of the answer you expect from the other person. Sometimes the word or is used with a rising tone and voice tailing off. For example, when you handed over the project, did you think it was finished or? Was the sales campaign successful or? You don't mind me asking this, do you? Happy with that? There's nothing you want to ask me, is there? These types of leading questions have limited use. At best, they can be used to lead the conversation to a particular subject quickly. But at worst, they can be seen as manipulating the relationship and can lead to resentment. Open questions are better because they result in more valuable and honest replies. Loaded questions. These are not really questions at all, but more expressions of disapproval or criticism. For example, surely you can see that, can't you? Didn't you realise that was a stupid thing to do? Can't you get anything right? And why on earth would you want to do it like that anyway? Multiple questions. Use one question at a time and wait for the answer. Multiple questions only serve to confuse the other person. For example, what did you think of the new procedures when they were introduced? Do you think they worked well? What problems did you foresee and how do you think you could overcome them? Assertiveness. We can categorise people's behaviour loosely into three categories of aggressive, submissive, or assertive. Aggression. When people behave aggressively, They try to win at the expense of others, ignoring their rights or coming across in a hostile way. People, when speaking aggressively, tend to use the word I excessively. They're blunt, using pointed statements that are insensitive to others' feelings, often expressing opinions as facts, may use sarcasm or personal criticism, patronising and making requests that sound like orders. People speaking aggressively may also blame others, use a sharp tone of voice, often speaking loudly and quickly, have overly strong eye contact, perhaps point their finger or thump their fist, and may also invade your personal space. Submission or passive communication. When people behave submissively, they try to avoid conflict, even at the expense of themselves, ignoring their own rights or coming across in an apologetic or self-effacing way. They tend to avoid taking responsibility, for example, by saying it's impossible or I can't. They may use rambling statements and speak hesitantly. They'll perhaps refrain from giving their opinion, preferring to go with the majority, be over-apologetic or seek permission from others, being self-critical, speaking in a soft, dull or flat voice, using minimal eye contact, frequently glancing down, perhaps wringing their hands or fidgeting and having a shrinking posture. When you act submissively, you fail to stand up for your own rights. You lose respect and self-respect, and people are likely to be frustrated with you. Don't be a pushover on the phone or face-to-face. Act confidently, listen actively, and get the action you require. Learn to express your point of view. Spell out your objectives openly and honestly, and explore your colleagues' thoughts, opinions, and wishes actively. Aggression and submission are natural. They are knee-jerk responses to a perceived threat, sometimes described as the fight-or-flight syndrome. Assertiveness. Now, assertiveness is a learned thinking approach, which includes building relationships and will always bring the best results. When people choose to behave assertively, they come across in a direct and solution-focused way. They use an appropriate number of I statements to show confidence, get to the point without being abrupt. They distinguish between fact and opinion, using questions to check facts, seeking solutions, speaking firmly, clearly, and understandably, maintaining steady and comfortable eye contact. Use expressive and open hand gestures, and maintain an upright posture, which shows concern and attention. If you want to communicate assertively, the following 6 techniques are useful to develop and practice. 1. Show you listen and understand. For example, I appreciate what you are saying. I see your point. I understand that. I can see that you are frustrated by this delay. I understand that you're angry about this matter. 2. Express how you feel. You can disclose your feelings with a simple statement, for example, I feel guilty, I feel unsure about, or it's a totally unacceptable situation and I feel quite embarrassed. This will reduce your anxiety, enabling you to relax and take charge of yourself and your feelings. 3. Say what you want to happen. Avoid unnecessary padding and keep your statement simple and brief. For example, I think the best option is for us to go back through the paperwork. I'd like you to. When is convenient for you? Or, I'm going to deal with this personally. 4. Repeat yourself if necessary. Stay with your statement or request by repeating it calmly over and over again. If you are not heard the first time, this technique enables you to maintain a steady position without falling prey to manipulative comment, irrelevant logic, or argumentative bait. It teaches persistence without having to rehearse arguments beforehand. 5. Field negative responses. Neutralize your feelings and indicate that you have heard what the person has said without getting drawn in. For example, yes, that's right, in response to, so, it's you again, is it? Acknowledge their response and continue with your statement or request, instead of feeling defensive or aggressive. For example, yes, I recognise you're up to your eyes right now, but I'd like you to provide me with the following information. 6. Find a workable compromise. When there is a conflict between your needs and wishes and those of someone else, you need to negotiate from an equal position. Assertiveness is not about winning, but about finding a true compromise which both parties need to take into consideration. Remember that compromising on a solution to a difficult situation need not compromise your self-respect. It is always best to seek a win-win situation rather than trying to score points. Cooperation works better than confrontation. This involves getting to grips with the content of the conversation and communicating effectively what each party wants. An assertive approach involves a genuine respect for those you deal with and a recognition of their rights as well as your own. These rights include knowing who you are talking to, being treated with respect as an equal human being, saying if the conversation is inconvenient, expressing your needs and feelings and having them listened to, expressing your opinions and thoughts and having them listened to, asking questions and requesting answers, asking for what you need or want, saying no or yes for yourself, agreeing or disagreeing with the person, saying I don't understand and asking for further explanation, declining responsibility for the mistakes and problems of others without feeling guilty, changing your mind, and making mistakes as a fallible human being and admitting to them too. Having looked at some specific things that you can do in order to work most effectively with your team, now let's look at some of the ingredients of a successful team itself. One of the most effective ways of building a good team is to get them to work on a common or shared goal. Sharing the activities associated with the objective is a good team building exercise and is also a good way to ensure maximum input and expertise is applied. It is also important to try and understand people's behavioural preferences when it comes to the role they play in a team. Certain behavioural profiling tools can be effectively used to help identify these preferences. However, Spending a little time on good old observation, questioning and listening also goes a long way. There have been many studies to try and establish the recipe for success as far as teams are concerned. The following list summarises the key principles identified by most research on this subject. Good teams have clearly stated goals and objectives, have openness and assertiveness, regular review, support and trust, clear procedures, clear standards and performance expectations, the opportunity for personal and professional development, social skills and social activities, a system of reward and recognition, and consistent, centred leadership. Influencing others. We all need to influence many different people during our personal and working lives, including our team workers. It is important to think about the most appropriate way to influence in each case. This means giving consideration to the situation and the person you are trying to influence, rather than always relying on your most comfortable style or approach. A good influencer will be flexible in their approach. The list below shows some of the qualities that we generally like to be displayed by people we deal with. Which of them, I wonder, could you improve upon? Good active listening skills. A good sense of humour. Strong sense of commitment and values. Approachable and flexible. Assertive and forthright. Showing care and consideration for others. Being fair and objective. Friendly and polite. Clear and articulate. Being well prepared and organised. Open and honest. Well informed and showing confidence. And positive and enthusiastic. The do's and don'ts of emailing with your colleagues. Nowadays, effective and positive communication with your colleagues is not just about using your face-to-face communication skills. Email often forms a major part of our working relationship and is an equally important and influential forum. Take a moment to consider for yourself some of the do's and don'ts as far as emailing is concerned, in your opinion. Emails have largely replaced inter-office memos nowadays and may form a large part of your interaction with your colleagues. They may never be printed out and are stored in your computer files, and it's good practice to prune those email files regularly. The speed and interactive nature of emails tends to invite knee-jerk responses and wordiness. They should be concise and short, a maximum length of one screen. Send anything lengthy as an attachment. When you write emails to friends, you can be as informal as you wish. However, when you send business emails, you need to remain courteous. Here are some hints. The do's of emailing. Do have an informative subject line. Put the key point of your message up front. Be brief. Make it easy for the reader to reply yes or no or give a short answer, instead of let me know what you think, write, let me know whether Monday or Wednesday is better for you. Make it easy to read. Combine upper and lower case. Use white space and a legible font. Use a conversational tone. Use symbols occasionally to emphasise. For example, putting asterisks around a word can be a good idea. End well with an appropriate next step. Proofread before sending. Wait a moment and check that you have the right recipients before pressing send. Ensure you give a good impression of yourself online, because remember that your email can be forwarded to anyone or everyone else in the company or indeed anywhere. Do restrict the message to one topic also, wherever possible. The don'ts of emailing. Don't use email if the message needs to be private or secure. Perhaps your company has a policy on this. Don't send an email that you wouldn't want anyone else to read. It's too easy to forward. Don't leave the subject line blank or use all capital letters. Don't forward a message without a brief comment about why you're forwarding it. And don't pepper emails with smiley faces or other emoticons. Don't let emoticons or offensive language detract from your message. And don't send without checking for mistakes. Now let's draw this all together by looking at how a team of people interact with each other and the dynamics that occur between them. Imagine a triangle with five horizontal layers. On the bottom layer, we have a layer called environment. Above that, behaviour. Above that, skills. Above that, beliefs and values. And finally, at the top, identity. Take a moment to consider and perhaps make a few notes in answer to the following questions about you and your team. What type of environment supports you working well together? Which are the best types of behaviours for you to display? What skills are required for you to work effectively together? Now think about, what is important to you? What do you care about? What inspires and excites you? What do you react negatively to? What makes you angry or frustrated or really winds you up? What kinds of situations within your team cause you to feel uncomfortable because you feel you are not being yourself? What values and beliefs are appropriate for you to hold as colleagues? What needs to be done in order to maintain good communication levels in the future? What could stop you from implementing those things? And what are you prepared to do about that? Given your answers to these questions, what could you do in order to promote even more effective team working with your colleagues? This concludes the podcast on team working. I do hope you found this useful, and thank you very much for listening.